On this week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee and Mr. Curtis Franklin back on the show today. Now, this week, we're going to break down the SEC's latest game-changing mandate on corporate cybersecurity. We'll definitely see if it'll make a difference. Plus, we have an exclusive chat with Ricardo Reyes. He's Chief Science Officer and co-founder of Erudite. I'm going to delve into how cutting-edge AI is transforming workplace well-being and tackling employee burnout head-on. Definitely should miss it. Quiet on the set. This episode is brought to you by Cisco Meraki. Without a cloud-managed network, businesses inevitably fall behind. Experience the ease and efficiency of Meraki's single platform to elevate the place where your employees and customers come together. Cisco Meraki maximizes uptime and minimizes loss to digitally transform your organization. Meraki's intuitive interface, increased connectivity, and multi-site management keep your organization operating seamlessly and securely, wherever your team is. Let Cisco Meraki's 24/7 available support help your organization's remote, on-site, and hybrid teams always do their best work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twyatt This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 554, recorded July 28th, 2023. Is AI the next spell checker? This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Miro. Miro is your team's online workspace to connect, collaborate, and create together. Tap into a way to map processes, systems, and plans with the whole team. Get your first three boards for free to start creating your best work yet at Miro.com/podcast. And by Cisco Meraki. With employees working in different locations, providing a unified work experience seems as easy as herding cats. How do you rein in so many moving parts? The Meraki Cloud Managed Network. Learn how your organization can make hybrid work work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit. And by Collide. Collide is a device-trusted solution for companies with Okta, and they ensure that if a device isn't trusted and secure, it can't log into your cloud apps. Visit collide.com/Twyatt to book an on-demand demo today. Welcome to Twyatt This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But you know what? I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts, starting with a principal analyst at MD and the man who knows everything about the enterprise. And he's also the very happy traveler as well. Mr. Curtis Franklin, welcome back. Curtis, where were you this week?
This week, I actually got to stay at home in a surprising development. So enjoyed being here, enjoyed getting some work done. I have been, building my presentation for the Omdia Analyst Summit at Black Hat. I have been setting my calendar, which is getting ever more full, for Black Hat, and I've been planning my time for both Black Hat and DEF CON, which are coming up in about 10 days. I will fly out two Sundays from now and look forward to reporting on everything that's going on via social media through all sorts of ways. I tell you what, I'll give everyone the details at the end of the show.
Sounds good. Thank you, Curtis. Looking forward to it. Well, we also have to welcome back our network geek, Mr. Brian Chee. Cheebert, how you been, my friend? It's been a while.
I'm still miserable. COVID is definitely not my friend. You're gonna hear me sucking on cough drops all through the show, and I'm hoping I don't cough into the microphone this time. Anyway, you folks take care, and if you have COVID, just stay home, isolate, don't share it. Because boy, on something like a cruise ship, the person that spread COVID probably spread it long and wide throughout the passenger manifest.
I hear you. Well, it's good to have you back. So thank you for being here. Well, you know what? We should definitely get started because we have had a busy week in the enterprise. And this week, we're breaking down the SEC's latest game-changing mandate on corporate cybersecurity. And we're diving in deep into what this means for businesses and how it impacts the boardroom and why it's a crucial step for shareholder and consumer protection in the digital age. Plus, we have an exclusive chat with Ricardo Reyes. He's chief science officer and co-founder of Erudite. And we're going to delve into how cutting-edge AI is really transforming workspace well-being and tackling employee burnout head-on. Now, you won't want to miss that insightful look into how HR technology is evolving and really the future of it. Lots to talk about here. So you definitely shouldn't miss it. Plus, definitely check out twit.tv/Twiat. Definitely subscribe to the Twiat podcast. Because this is how we support the show. And we have how we keep moving. Plus, also check out Club Twit, twit.tv/Club Twit. It's only $7 a month. It's an ad-free podcast, and it gets you all the special events and exclusive Discord server that you need. And it's a lot of fun. So definitely check that out. But first, like we always do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. In cybersecurity news, Cloudflare is stepping up its game in the fight against BGP hijacking. It's about time. Now, for those unfamiliar, BGP is the Border Gateway Protocol, and it's like a GPS for the internet, directing traffic to its correct destination. Now, it's an older protocol with a notorious security flaw. It's susceptible to actually hijacking, meaning bad actors can redirect internet traffic to wherever they please, and it's a significant threat to businesses globally, and it's now being addressed head-on by Cloudflare. Now, they're introduced an innovative detection system which uses real-time threat intelligence to identify potential BGP hijacks. Now, this tool proactively spots unusual routes that might actually indicate a hijack in progress. Now, it's like a burglar alarm for the internet, and it's alerting network administrators at the first sign of trouble, allowing for really swift navigation, protecting the data integrity. Now, the groundbreaking tool from Cloudflare is actually posed to be a game changer in the cybersecurity field, addressing one of the fundamental flaws in the internet's architecture. It underscores Cloudflare's actually commitment to creating a secure and robust digital world.
Well, there's an interesting story out of Washington, D.C. this week. Now, it's not all unusual for a government agency to put new rules into place. It is unusual for the agency to require that those rules involve regular testing, but that's exactly what the TSA has done with its latest update to rules of some players in the fields of critical infrastructure. According to an article on Dark Reading, this week the TSA updated rules for pipeline operators to include a requirement to enhance cyber resilience through implementation of a TSA-approved Cybersecurity Implementation Plan, or CIP, along with testing of at least two objectives in the proposed plans. Now, while earlier versions of the policy require these processes and plans to be developed, owners and operators are now required to actually test the plans and evaluate how well they did. The plans, along with the testing results and plans for future tests, must be submitted to the TSA annually. All of the existing requirements, such as reporting significant cyber-related incidents to CISA, designating a point of contact, and conducting a vulnerability assessment, which involves another bit of testing, will also remain in place. Now, all of this security and testing took on added urgency after the Colonial Pipeline ransomware incident. That incident showed that an attacker didn't have to take down pumps and valves to bring a pipeline's operations to a crashing halt. It's important to note that the TSA says all pipeline operators already have a TSA-approved cybersecurity implementation plan in place, and it's natural to assume that all will comply with the new requirements. It's interesting to think that there are a total of 16 industry segments within the definition of critical infrastructure used by the U.S. government. As I've said before here on Twiat, if you're not sure whether or not your business is part of the critical infrastructure, it probably is. All these segments must have CIPs. It's going to be interesting to see whether the requirement for testing is ultimately expanded to include all 16 segments.
Well, this Ars Technica article sounds like something from, ancient history, but it's not. AT&T and Verizon's ancient lead cables have U.S. lawmakers demanding action. Okay, so the bottom line on this Ars Technica article is that several telcos still have legacy lead-wrapped, lead-shielded cables still in the ground, and that lead is slowly leaching into the groundwater. Since lead is soft and a terrific shielding material, it has been used throughout history, with ancient Romans slowly getting lead poisoning from water pipes made from lead. I should also point out that rubber wrapping around lead-shielded power cables is also slowly degrading, and that quite a few large campuses and municipalities need to pay attention to the condition of their lead-shielded power conductors. While working at the University of Hawaii, we had a caution to not work on certain inter-building power feeds due to the lead content, and that super costly replacements were waiting for capital improvement project funding from the state legislature. Well, my other caution is you may have a lead-wrapped albatross when buying or leasing commercial properties, especially since I've never seen any sort of significant disclaimer laws on legacy power feeds. So perhaps when looking at a new property, you should consider asking the property agent when the building was put up and whether the underground cables are shielded with lead.
We are following up on a significant development in digital privacy, the recent seizure of a Mastodon server by the FBI. Now, Mastodon, for those that don't know, is a decentralized social network as part of what is known as the Fediverse. This FBI action has sparked widespread concern about user data privacy. Now, key details include that the FBI seized the server in an attempt to actually investigate a specific user's activities, but this action potentially exposed all users' data on that server to scrutiny. Such a broad sweep raises alarm bells on privacy rights and demands greater protection measures from there. Now, as a reaction, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, is advising Fediverse users and hosts on steps to protect their privacy. Now, recommendations include data minimization, avoiding data retention beyond necessity, and the use of encryption to protect user information. The EFF is actually also emphasizing the need for service providers to resist overly broad government demands for data. This indicates an incident and highlights the ongoing battle for digital privacy and underscores the urgent need for robust data protection measures in the ever-expanding Fediverse and the universe. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the amazing Bites. But before we get to the Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Miro. Now, quick question to you. Are you and your team still going from, you know, tab to tab, tool to tool, losing brilliant ideas, and maybe even important information along the way? Well, with Miro, that doesn't need to happen anymore. That's right. Miro is the collaborative visual platform that brings all of your great work together, no matter where you are. Now, whether you're working from home or in a hybrid workspace, everything comes together in one workspace, and that is online. Now, at a first glance, it just seemed like a simple digital whiteboard, but Miro's capabilities run way beyond that. It's a visual collaboration tool packed with features for the whole team to build on each other's ideas and really build the future. Now, shorten the time to launch so your customers get what they need faster. Now, with Miro, you need only one tool to see your vision come to life. Planning, researching, you can brainstorm, designing, and even feedback cycles. It all can all be done on a live Miro board across teams. And faster inputs mean faster outcomes. In fact, Miro users report the tool increasing project delivery speed by 29%. That's a lot. View and share the big picture overview in just a cinch. When everyone has a voice and everyone can tap into a single source of truth, your team remains engaged, invested, and most importantly, they're happy. Now, cut out any confusion on, you know, who needs to do what, actually mapping out processes, roles, and timelines. You can actually do that in several templates, including Miro's swim lane diagram. And strategic planning becomes even easier when it's visual and accessible. Tap into a way to actually map processes, systems, and plans with the whole team so they not only view it, have a chance to give feedback as well. And if you're feeling meeting fatigue, I know I definitely am. Miro users report saving up to 80 hours per user per year just from streamlining conversations and feedback. Ready to be part of the more than 1 million users who join Miro every month? Get your first three boards for free to start working better together at miro.com/podcast. That's miro.com/podcast. And we thank Miro for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the Bite. So it's actually an unprecedented move. The Securities Exchange Commission, or SEC, has actually laid down the gauntlet on corporate cybersecurity practices. Now, the regulatory body now mandates that publicly traded companies have corporate cybersecurity experts on their governance boards. Now, this significant shift is a response to increasing threat landscape and the escalating impact of cyber attacks on businesses and the wider economy. Now, this new requirement actually underscores a couple things: the importance of cybersecurity knowledge and decision making at the highest level, and simply put, the SEC is ensuring boardroom decisions encompass those digital threats and vulnerabilities, as well as strategies to mitigate them going forward. Now, it's worth noting that these cybersecurity experts won't just be merely figureheads. The SEC stipulates they must have real and practical cybersecurity experience. Now, this aims to foster a robust security culture where decisions are informed by deep understanding of those cybersecurity risks and the potential, really, for an impact on the company and operations and the shareholder value. Now, critics, however, express some concerns, of course, about finding qualified individuals to meet these new requirements, given that the ongoing shortage of cybersecurity professionals that are out there. The SEC, on the other hand, sees this as an opportunity to nurture talent and elevate cybersecurity as a crucial business function. We'll see. Furthermore, companies failing to meet the SEC's mandate will have to disclose the reason publicly. And this move is expected to actually drive compliance and encourage transparency in corporate cybersecurity practices. Now, this mandate is a game changer, I think. It could be. And I'm not sure if it's going in the right direction, but we'll see. It reinforces the integral role here of cybersecurity and how it really plays into business processes. As cyber threats continue to really evolve, as we talk about each and every week, such as measures from regulatory bodies help keep companies and shareholders and consumers safe. We'll see. Well, I want to bring my co-host in and get their opinions here. I want to start with you, Curtis. You know, obviously, you know, can you explain why the SEC is actually emphasizing the presence of cybersecurity experts on boards for publicly traded companies versus, you know, private companies?
Well, I think that what we have here is the recognition that a cyber risk has become a key component of the total risk matrix of an organization, in the same way that financial risk would be. And that security is an important way to modulate that risk. So in the same way that it would be expected to have someone with financial expertise on the board of a publicly held company, now they are raising cybersecurity to that level. And that's a good thing. You know, we've been talking for a while here at Twyatt about the fact that cybersecurity is being raised to a board level concern instead of being something that, you know, the geeks down in the basement take care of. It's something that is a complete executive level issue. The thing that's interesting to me is trying to decide what makes for cybersecurity expertise. For example, board members are often executives from other companies in non-competing areas. So if you are a public company in, you know, a manufacturing field, would having a board member who is the CEO of a security company be evidence of that expertise? We don't know. Would it require someone with a particular credential? I don't know, but I will say, I read the article that this conversation is based on. They listed a number of credentials that are available, you know, certificates and credentials. Many of the credentials in cybersecurity are what I would call hands-on credentials. You know, things like certified as ethical hacker is a hands-on kind of credential. Executive boards in corporations are absolutely not hands-on organizations. They do not deal with actually touching the levers and knobs of control within a company. That's the responsibility of the managers and the employees. And so if you're going to look at credentials, You know, I think something like a CISSP would be far better than something like a certified ethical hacker. But all of this is the kind of thing that we're going to have to work out. And I suspect we're going to have to work it out with the help of attorneys as we go through the who exactly is qualified to fulfill this particular regulatory slot on the board.
Agreeable. I want to throw this to Schiebert, because Schiebert, this is something out of a little bit of your history, right?
So I got a whole bunch of fatherly advice from my dad. You know, everybody does, right? But my dad happened to be in an interesting position. The whole bit of air conditioning is a very, very new technology. And he saw a lot of similarities in my industry. And basically he said, the HVAC industry, when it first got started, was the wild, wild west. Anything goes. No certifications. Anyone could do it. You know, go to town. Well, as we started getting fires, like the infamous, some of the original was coolants were propane based or petroleum based. And there, I can't remember the name of the nightclub. There was a nightclub in Hollywood, I believe, that had a huge fire, and it was because of the air conditioning system. That drove a lot of regulatory people, you know, the legislation and so forth, saying, hey, you guys can't have this wild, wild west anymore. You need to go and make some changes. Well, we started getting, you know, ASHRAE and the very other things. You had to have mechanical engineering degrees in order to design these things. And as the post-war industrialization really took off, the entire industry of cooling became much, much more regulated. I see cybersecurity following in the same footsteps. We've had this wild, wild west for a fairly long time. You've had a lot of people claiming to be cybersecurity experts and not really. And we're going to start needing to have more experience, more knowledge going from the board to the production line. So that's the point I'm making. We're not doing something new. It's happening again. It's happened to several industries in the past. We're going to start having to require some sort of certification or education. I think the academic world's going to need to play catch up, because a lot of it has just been very haphazard. You know, it's what a professor thinks we need to have. And, bringing this into our future conversation with our guest, I think AI is actually going to drive a lot of this. You know, applying AI to human resource management is going to be a big, big step, especially making sure that the HR people don't miss certifications or miss connections. You know, when I was with Xerox in Honolulu, our HR was in California, and a lot of things got missed. And I think I'm looking forward to asking our guest, Ricardo, is AI going to make a lot of changes? And you know, how are we going to apply it to how the world is changing?
It's good points. Those are good points. Now, I want one more question to Curtis here, because, you know, I think this is an interesting thing. Obviously, this whole thing promotes transparency and accountability, you know, and Brian brings up a good point. We're going to need potentially have some new certifications. However, you know, we're talking about executives here. Number two questions. How are we going to verify that the people that are on the board have the skills? How is the SEC going to even do that? And it's not just a bunch of bloat on a resume that they've added essentially, and some screen scraper went and pulled it and said, this person's qualified. And number two, how is that going to ensure that, you know, the transparency that the companies need will be valid transparency. It won't just be some bloat or some kind of marketing ploy, essentially, that they're basically saying, hey, we have a qualified person here. I guess I'm just missing maybe a point here that they're trying to do.
The answer to the first point, how will they know, is they have no clue. They haven't figured it out. I don't know that they're going to figure it out in the next 2 or 3 years. I think it will take some time to get a handle on this. And again, we know, being in the industry, there is a vast difference between qualification and credential. There are an awful lot, we know them, there are an awful lot of unqualified people who manage to get some credentials. In the same way, there are some massively qualified people who, for various reasons, never go to the trouble of getting the certification. So the two, there's not a direct mapping of one to another. That is the sort of thing that regulators and lawyers hate to hear. So they really have no idea. Now, on the second, how does having this individual, this mythical individual who is qualified, help with transparency? I think the goal is that you will have someone on the board who is able to say during board discussions, hey, we need to make sure we're following the regulations and following enterprise best practices for cybersecurity. This is especially important when you get things like notification of a breach. You know, we have in a number of jurisdictions, and the SEC has some fairly short windows of time in which notification must be made to regulators and shareholders if a material breach has happened, and someone on the board who understands what that trip is. I mean, if you have 3 records stolen out of 100 million, is that a reportable incident? Hard to say. If you have 3 million stolen, then yeah, it's going to be reportable. It's the area in between where you need someone who really does know the regulations. And let's say here that a piece of the qualification for a board member is going to be not so much that they know how to protect BGP tables or how to make sure that your firewall rules are appropriate. It is going to be someone who understands what the regulations around security are, what the regulations around privacy are, and how both of those are met through partnerships, through supplier relationships, and through the overall goals and strategic policies that the organization has in place.
That's great insights. I do want to throw one more over to Brian, because obviously he's a board member, and I'm just curious about this, because obviously are we saying that maybe from now on organizations are going to have to go find a CISO and they're going to have to pay more and stick them on a board, basically? Or are they going to have separate people on the board? And if that's the case, if those separate people, how much influence are they going to have on a CISO or a CSO or a CIO if they've already tried to secure the network? So I feel like they're creating some hierarchical mess here, if that's the case.
Yeah, it's all about chain of command. It's going to be all about chain of command. And I think it's along the line of, if you have a commanding officer that doesn't know anything, say, about fighting a ship, say it's a ship commander, and you're trying to tell the chief engineer to do this, that, or the other thing, and they have no idea that that would blow up the ship, you know, it's a bad analogy, but I think it's more along the lines of, the people that are steering the company, the big picture people, the board of directors, need to be saying, we want to do something. We want a direction that makes sense. And having someone that knows about cybersecurity so that they ask reasonable things or steer the company in reasonable direction, I think is going to be a necessity. You know, there's, you can draw whatever analogy you like, but I've seen lots and lots of board of directors, or commanding officers for that matter, make some really, really bad decisions because they don't have the background. And I think that's really what the SEC is really trying to get at. They're saying, make sure you have people on your board that are knowledgeable enough so that they ask reasonable things. They steer the ship in a reasonable direction instead of steering it onto the rocks. So because things like, you know, like, you know, cryptojacking of your systems, if someone goes and invades your system and holds it for ransom, do you want your let's call a spade a spade. Do you want a Barbie doll making the decisions? Since we have Barbie in the theaters now, do you want a Barbie doll that doesn't know anything about cybersecurity making the decisions on paying a multi-million-dollar ransom? Probably not. So I'm having a tough time with analogies today, but I think I got my point across. Let's have people asking the right questions. Let's have people making intelligent decisions instead of just saying, well, that sounds good. I heard that on, you know, late night TV.
Right. Agreed. Well, I think that does it for that. I think we've got the point across. I think we think, you know, obviously this could help, but in the same sense, I think they got a lot of work ahead of them. Well, folks, that does it for the Bites. Next up, we have our amazing guests. But before we get to our guests, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Cisco Meraki, the experts in cloud-based networking for hybrid work. Now, whether your employees at home or working from home, or at even in a cabin in the mountains or a lounge chair at the beach, a cloud-managed network provides the same exceptional work experience no matter where they are. Now, you may as well roll out the welcome mat because hybrid work is really here to stay. We know that. Hybrid work works best in the cloud and has its perks for both employees and even leaders. And workers can move faster and they can deliver better results. And with cloud-managed network, while leaders can actually automate in distributed operations, build more sustainable workspaces, and proactively protect that network. Now, an IDG marketplace research report conducted for Meraki highlights top-tier opportunities in supporting hybrid work. Hear this. Hybrid work is a priority for 78% of C-suite executives. Leaders want to actually drive collaboration forward while staying on top of or boosting productivity and security. Hybrid work is also actually has its challenges. The IDG report raises the red flag about security, noting that 48% of leaders report cybersecurity threats as a primary obstacle to improving workspace and workforce experiences. Always on security monitoring is part of what makes the cloud managed network so awesome. IT can use apps from Meraki's vast ecosystem of partners, actually turnkey solutions built to work seamlessly with Meraki Cloud Platform for asset tracking, location analytics, and a lot more. In fact, they can gather insights on how people use their workspaces. Now, in a smart space, environmental sensors can track activity and occupancy levels to stay on top of cleanliness. Reserve workspaces based on vacancy and employee profiles, also called hot desking, which allows employees to quickly scout out a place to work. Locations in restricted environments can be booked in advance and include time-based door access. There's also mobile device management, MDM, and integrating devices and systems allow IT to actually manage and update and troubleshoot company-owned devices, even when the device and employee are in a remote location. Turn any space into a place of productivity. Empower your organization with the same exceptional experience no matter where they work with Meraki and the Cisco suite of technology. Learn how your organization can make hybrid work work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit. And we thank Meraki for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. Today we have Ricardo Reyes. He's Chief Science Officer and co-founder of Erudite. Welcome to the show, Ricardo.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Now, our audience is really a large spectrum of experiences. We have people who are just entry level, just beginning, all the way up to the really experienced CISOs and CTOs and that kind of thing. And they love to hear people's origin stories and their journey through tech. Can you take us through a journey through tech and actually what brought you to Erudite?
Sure. So I've been programming since 2001. So pretty much since the internet was just barely after the dot-com bubble and like figuring out what was going to happen. I come from Mexico. So we got the dot-com bubble like 10 years later. So when I was getting started, people were just finding out why they should have a website and what was the internet. And I would sell websites to anyone who let themselves to be sold a website. Like I sold to local gyms, local stores, tried to get people to, there was no PayPal, there was no infrastructure for payment. So everything had to be still like, okay, you pay me on the bank, then take a photo, then send me the photo. And then I make your subscription go valid. Like, of course, some of the audience knows this Wild Wild West before there was any kind of payment infrastructure on the internet. But then I got started with AI. I was studying med school, actually. I didn't plan to be an AI person at all. I started med school, actually. And how I got into artificial intelligence was trying to figure out how to put people prostheses on their backs. So a lot of people from all the work we all have to do, sit in a chair, looking like a shrimp every day. People get their bones, their spinal cords, and you know, like their backbones really hurt and herniated. So a big problem for adult people is like all of these disc replacements. So I got started on AI on how to calculate the best disc replacements because this is not simple software. Like how do you calculate like how is a backbone going to behave over gravity and while walking and while jumping? So then that's how I discovered AI, that this wasn't a simple program to write, like just an algorithm one after the other, but you had to actually have some observations of columns and then try to put that into software. So this was in 2011. And since then, I've been just working in fashion, in photography, in construction, in agriculture, in like satellite imaging. And then I met my current business partner, Alejandro, who is from Spain. And he's a psychologist and also an engineer. So we were just discussing like what was next, what was the biggest impact we could have in the current market 4 years ago. And we figured out that behind everything, there's always people. Like no matter what industry you're in, no matter how old are you, no matter your profession, you always have to interact and handle people. And the most difficult part of building a business, at least from my perspective, is always people. Like you can have the best idea, you can have all the money in the world, but you don't have the right people, or you don't know how to manage them or how to carry them to your goal. You're nothing. So then we got into the people business.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I think we should definitely get into it. Now, obviously, the pandemic itself has pretty much turned everything upside down. What are you seeing some of the pressing challenges organizations are really facing today when it comes to whether it's employee well-being or even maybe productivity?
Not everyone knows how to make friends. And like, at least in an office, you have your graphical excuse to make friends, or a timely based excuse, or like a project. But then when you are just hiring like crazy, let's say you're a startup, you just raised a Series A or a seed round, you start hiring people, just like how do you introduce people to each other so they start to collaborate? How do you keep relationships between departments that are not based on projects? Because if a relationship is based on projects, you always have some kind of either collaboration or competition. And if it's collaboration, then you are on a good track, because then these people will try to understand each other and figure out the way together. But when you have teams that naturally compete with each other, let's say, for example, technology versus product, or product versus business, or this kind of like departments that have no other way but to... they have a limiting constraint, either be time, either be budget. So they have always tension. It's very hard to make people understand each other and figure out each other outside of the work context. So then, I think that's like the main. We, for example, do get-togethers every 3 months for people to know each other in a more relaxed setting. Right. But of course, we are a 50 people company. We can still handle that. But let's say a 10,000 people company, like how do you even do that? You know, like, and you have these multinational companies where you're a tiny person in one department of 100 departments, and you have to work with so many different people from so many different places. So just the natural development of human relationships has gotten right. more artificial, and you have to force it a little bit more. And forced relationships are not as good as relationships because you actually are naturally attracted toward people. So yeah, I think that's the main conflict.
I mean, I definitely agree that linking people together, especially with the remote work and people in both on-site and off-site, people, parts of hybrid work, that kind of thing. I definitely think it's one of the big challenges of organizations today. And it does cause a lot of people working harder than they necessarily need to, and maybe even being less productive because you're just not connected to people or have a buddy on another team or another partner team or that kind of thing to help out. What do you think that are some of the common strategies that some companies today are actually doing to tackle some of that?
Yeah. So this situation directly impacts engagement, right? Like a lot of people do engagement surveys, have engagement software. One of our main metrics in our software is engagement. And if you want to keep retention high, you need to keep engagement high because historically, from my own experience and from what we've seen in the data, a lot of people maybe don't like their job, but they like their teammates and they like their boss and they stay. Or maybe they like the work, but then they have an awful team and then they leave to whoever is going to be in the same industry, but better opportunity to like right. thrive in the social sphere. So like for some people, not even if they're paying you €1 million per year, can think of staying on a team where they're being treated badly and where they go to their office feeling bad or where they don't know anyone. Especially when you're dealing, for example, with northern countries like Canada or Germany or Sweden, like where like people are used to being isolated. It's probably easier. But if you go to a more connected country, let's say like Spain or like Italy or like France, I think those countries are the ones having the hardest time because these people are used to all the time hanging to have beers, hanging to have some lunch. And now there's not this natural context to connect with your coworkers. So then it's just some email or some Slack username or some like people you tag somewhere, but you can't even put face to them. So right. yeah, I think engagement is having a very hard time since the COVID.
So a lot of people, obviously, you know, they interact, especially when they're remote, they interact in specific ways, whether they're using Teams or Zoom or Slack or whatnot. So they have their communication channels for, you know, persistent chat. They're using video, they're using email. So there's lots of communication channels that potentially have some signals to how they are doing, whether they are being productive or not, or whether they are, you know, whether they are causing burnout. However, there are some, I would say, hidden signals that you don't necessarily get. What kind of data would you use from a person, unless it's a face-to-face kind of like honest conversation about how things are going? Like what kind of information and signals are you using to potentially, you know, identify these types of things?
Yeah, that's how we got started in our product because we realized that, for example, when you run surveys, one is getting people to answer the service, which is already a hard
time. Honestly, like not only answer, but answer it honestly, right?
That's one, like getting people to answer, then getting right. people to answer honestly, like you said, then like getting the right questions, ask in a way that you don't bias people to answer or think you want them to answer something specific. So we realized that there was a lot to do with service. And then there's this phrase that someone told me at some point of my life, and I will never forget that. The worst thing you can do is to optimize something that shouldn't be there in the first place. Like, you can find 1,000 ways to do service, but then what if you don't do service at all? Like, what if you just remove the service factor and just try to figure out another way to do it? So then we thought, okay, people text each other all the time. Like, so then maybe by analyzing this text, we could figure out more about how they naturally interact. And of course, people always say like, oh, but what about my privacy, right? Like, what about, like, you big brother, you're listening to me, you're like trying to figure out all of what I do. So we've been tackling that a lot of times as to make people understand that we don't wanna listen to anyone's life. We just want to provide some kind of value to people as to create better engagement. So we've tried everything since just being inside of Slack, inside of Teams, trying to provide value also to the employee inside of Teams, try to anonymize everything, try to make it that you have to have a department of more than 3 people to see anyone's metrics. So we think there's a lot of value in just the natural communication of people in all of their communication channels, but let it be Slack, email, Zoom, Teams, whatever. But we're still trying to figure out how to deal with people understanding that it's not about trying to mess with their privacy, but rather like to try to channel all that they say into something that provides value to everyone. So I think that's the main question we have. And I think anyone who wants to get into the serverless employee experience analysis software, the first that figures out how to do this is the one that's going to be a unicorn. And that's what we're trying to do.
And one more question. I do want to bring my co-host back in. Now, obviously, there's a whole, we talk a lot about privacy on this show. And I do know that there's lots of services right out there. In fact, I've interacted with Glint before. It's an AI-empowered employee engagement platform. And it can sometimes raise some eyebrows. It can, you know, it's like somebody's listening or an AI is listening to what I'm saying or my chat messages or my emails, all to just really determine how I'm feeling. So it's almost as if, you know, I kind of think of the movie Gattaca, somebody's going to come in and just kind of create their own narrative so that they, you know, so they can basically hide behind their own narrative so they don't have to let the AI know exactly how they are because they know it's there. So I guess the question to you is, you know, how have companies and organizations really responded to this type of technology because of the fact of, you know, kind of like big brother watching and determining how they feel?
Yeah, it's all about value. Like, I think, like, we interact with ChatGPT, for example, every day, and you tell them a lot of things and even copy-paste code or copy-paste emails or copy-paste a lot of things just to have something done. But the value you get from it is worth enough as you to risk anything and don't even think about what you're copy-pasting into it. That's what we're trying to figure out, like what's the value we can provide towards engagement, towards burnout, that can make people forget that we are listening to their messages, because it's not like we are actually listening anything, like that's an AI doing it, right? Like I don't know what our users do. They're isolated into their own Amazon Web Services account. Like I don't even have access to their messages. Like I don't know what they're doing, right? But it's the feeling. As anything human, what matters is the feeling that people get about this kind of technology. So I think that's the biggest challenge on the employee experience sector. Like how do people feel about AI being applied to knowing how they feel?
Absolutely. Well, when we come back, we do want to talk more with Ricardo about AI for HR. I'm going to bring my co-host back in as well. But before we do thank another great sponsor of this week, Enterprise Tech, and that's Collide. Collide is a device trust solution for companies with Okta, and they ensure that if a device isn't trusted or even secure, it can't log into your cloud applications. Now, if you work in a security or IT, or your company has Okta, this message is really for you. Have you noticed that in the past few years, the majority of data breaches are really hacks you read about and have something in common? Well, it's employees. That's right. Sometimes an employee's device gets hacked because of an unpatched software, OS, and sometimes the employee leaves sensitive data really in an unsecured place. And it seems like every day a hacker breaks into or using credentials they fished from an employee. And the problem here isn't your end users. It's the solutions that are supposed to prevent these breaches, right? But it really doesn't have to be this way. Imagine a world where only secure devices can access your cloud apps. Now, in this world, phished credentials are useless to hackers, and you can manage every OS, including Linux, all from a single dashboard. Best of all, you can get employees to fix their own device security issues without creating more work for your IT team. Now, the good news is you don't have to imagine this world. You can just start using Collide. Visit collide.com/twiet to book an on-demand demo today and see how it works for yourself. That's KOLIDE.com/twiet. And we thank Collide for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Ricardo Reyes. He's the Chief Science Officer of Erudite, and we've talked a lot about AI and just how it can really help and assist organizations, especially uncovering people's burnout and productivity. But I do want to bring my co-host back in because I'm sure they have some thoughts and questions here as well. Curtis, I'll throw it to you first.
I appreciate it, Ricardo. It's been great listening to the conversation so far. One of the things I want to ask about, you know, HR is a fairly broad topic. It covers many different aspects of the relationship between the company and the employee. And last week, when I was at the Splunk conference, they talked about, in their mind, the importance of having AI that is focused, that is, as they put it, has domain expertise. How important do you think that is? You know, is it better for a company to think about having multiple AI instances, each one devoted to a particular topic, rather than one giant enterprise AI that will do everything?
I love this topic because a lot of people have been focusing a lot on LLMs, like large language models. And that's heartbreaking because most of the advance of the generative AI revolution is about reinforcement learning from human feedback. Like this algorithm that, so how ChatGPT or any other natural language processing model, natural language processing like Llama or these models are being trained, is to create something that is satisfying for humans, right? That's the metric. Like what they're measuring is this text that I'm producing satisfying for humans? Doesn't mean if it's true. It doesn't mean if it's accurate. It doesn't mean if it's logic. It's just like, is it satisfying? Can I trick a human into saying this is awesome text, right? And then what most models do is to memorize the information, like just to this billion parameters models we hear every day. What they're just doing is using 80% of these billion parameters to memorize the information. And then when you input some kind of prompt, they go through all these million things and then give you like a mixture of everything that came in between. This trick can also be achieved with a vector database or with a graph database with a lot less parameters. The problem is that that wouldn't be business for big tech. Like that wouldn't be business for the people trying to sell GPUs. So all this marvelous open sourcing everything that is up than 7 billion, it's all about selling GPUs. Like that's a business of AI nowadays. It's like, how can I get people to use more Microsoft Azure, more Google Cloud? And what OpenAI has been doing marvelously is that all the models that are 7 or 13B can run in a GPU that is cheaper than ChatGPT. But as soon as you get more than one GPU, ChatGPT is just cheaper than any other solution you can deploy to achieve the same accuracy. So eventually your CTO just figures out that they should just use OpenAI platform directly. So then that's one of the most brilliant things I've seen in my life anyone do. Like, Microsoft strategy is just brilliant because they never lose money. Like, if anyone wants to run anything one GPU, they use Azure. If anything gets more expensive and their CTO is not as educated, they will still get money from GPUs, from running Falcon or from running anything big. And then if they figure out it's cheaper to use ChatGPT, they get money through OpenAI. So they never lose money. It's amazing how they are able to do so.
Well, I wanted to probe a little bit at one of the things you said, because you're right. We've all been talking since November of last year about generative AI, large language models. But there are far more different types of AI engines out there, some of which we've been using, I mean, neural networks and other things that we've been using for years. As you look at the AI landscape, do you see generative AI, large language models, just taking over? Or do you think there's still a role for these other types of AI for doing things like automating processes rather than providing information to human beings?
It's similar to the question, should programmers run the world, or do we still need lawyers and architects and artists? Like, it's kind of the same kind of question, right? Like, of course you need some mixture of experts, right? That's normally how this architecture is called in AI, right? Like, because the models are optimizing for something. There's some kind of loss function. There's some kind of optimization of some metric they're trying to do, whatever data set you give them. So there's no jack of all trades, just like there's no jack of all trades in humans, right? And if you want a jack of all trades, just as in humans, it would have to be a genius, right? So you will have to have a genius model that is just massive, but memory doesn't equate function. And the more parameters you have, the harder it is to connect new ideas or to connect new information, because the distance between the knowledge is so wide that just the architecture of the model doesn't let connect. Like, it's so far away, the knowledge, that there's no way this model is going to be able to collapse it into a new knowledge, into a new creation, into a new synthesis of the original signal, which is what humans do so nice. Like, the magic of humans is that we receive so much input and compress it so good, and then our brains are so small that the ideas are so close that we're able to do marvelous things, because everything is all the time creating fusion. And then as the models go bigger, the harder it is for them to synthesize new knowledge. They can, of course, replicate a lot of knowledge, but they are not going to create anything interesting.
Ricardo, I want to ask about triggers. Human resources has, you know, all kinds of ramifications. I'm going to bring up one of the darker aspects. I used to work at Xerox in Honolulu. And the human resource department got moved from Honolulu to San Francisco, and they missed a growing problem that ended up in a person going crazy and killing 7 of my coworkers. So that's kind of a dark way of looking at it. But do you think AI is going to help us when we have this turnover in the HR world? You know, the personnel that run HRs, they're going to turn over. And there's going to be gaps in the training, gaps, you know, people miss things. Do you think AI is going to help us avoid those gaps and avoid danger signs, you know, the flags that should be seen, the red flags waving in the wind?
It's all about attention. Like, what do we pay attention to, right? So then, like, we all have Like, that's the magic and the marvelous thing about the internet. Like, you could learn anything. Like, if you decide, I want to learn quantum physics, you can go and just do it. It will take you a different amount of time. Probably, if you have an expert, you're going to find out the path to knowing what you need to know faster than if you just stumble into things and try to figure out the path yourself. But then it depends on what you pay attention to. Like, all the resources are there. And like, we have so many open source models in things like Hugging Face, for example. Like, there's like, you could build anything by combining ChatGPT with some expert, with all of what is in YouTube and all the tutorials that are on the internet, with all of the open source models. The problem is, like, what is the most important problem to you today? And how much money do you have? You know, and how much time do you have? So, given how much money and time you have, what do you want to pay attention to? And I think that's the question about artificial intelligence. Like, who has the money, who has the time, and what are we paying attention to? So if anyone is willing to pay attention, money and time to this problem, I think we could solve it. But like, for example, we're now close to our Series A, and we are a group of 50 people putting attention every day to making people's lives better in the human resources industry. And we have things like gender equality, like racial equality, like burnout engagement, turnover, workload coping. Like, we have a lot of metrics that we try to pay attention to. But there are some problems that are very complex. So then we might also need at some point have an aide of someone who specializes further away into like psychiatry or psychology. And then we can maybe connect through an API or something and say like, hey, I'm an HR software. I know my limits. I know what I'm good at. I think this person is outside of my professional scope. And you, person who has passed through HIPAA, you, person who has passed through all the regulations for health software, maybe you should take this person in, you know? And I'm willing to put from my insurance, I'm willing to put whatever I need to put, so you can now take it on, and you that are an expert and are regulated and can do better than me, here it is, this person, you know? Because I don't think, like, we are an HR software. We can only solve so much. And the health industry it's a very complicated industry. There's so much regulation. There's so much responsibility. And we are AI people. So I just want to make people have a better work-life experience. And it's important for us also to know where are we not doctors and just say, like, hey, doctor, I need your help, you know?
It also comes down to, you know, you're not going to have HR people experts in everything, right? So exactly. I'm going to ask my last question. That's, is Erudite paying attention? Are you giving attention to cross-national boundaries HR issues? So, like, you know, my favorite example is, I'm going to poke a finger at Curtis. He works for a UK company, so he's got that HR, but he lives in the United States. That's got to be a headache for HR people. And I was just wondering, does Erudite give attention to things like that?
I mean, I'm in Latvia right now. Most of my team is either in San Francisco or in several cities of Spain, and once in France. Like, people in Erudite are everywhere in the world. So we need to, by design, have an international HR strategy, right? And you have to be aware to all the cultural differences between people, like how much people need to talk to each other, how much people need attention, how much people need you to be like very straight to the point, how much people need you to be like more polite, how much people need you to be like kind, how many people don't like you cutting through the bushes and not like, you know, you need to like personalize your strategy to whoever you are managing. And that's also what we're trying to do. Like we have this new feature that's not still in production, but users will have in the next 3 months. That is, let's say, a copilot for HR, right? Like now everyone has some GPT for their company. Like Stack Overflow just did it, I think, today or yesterday or something, after ChatGPT has been stealing their money from all the questions. I remember since I started programming, everyone looked their responses to any problem in life, in code, in Stack Overflow. And now everyone looks it in ChatGPT. So now they made their copilot for Stack Overflow. We're doing the same. Like we have our copilot for HR, and then we're trying to handle all these complex, multi-variable, multi-country questions through the copilot.
Right. Well, Ricardo, thank you so much for being here. Obviously, with great shows, time flies. So I want to give you a chance really at the end here to tell little folks at home a little bit more about Erudite, where they can get started, how organizations can get in touch with you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we have our website, erudite.ai. We're on Instagram, we're on TikTok, but you can just Google erudite.ai and you'll find everything about us.
Fantastic. Thanks again for being here. Well, folks, you have done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to TWI. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my amazing co-host, starting at the very own, Mr. Brian Chee, who's great to have back on. You can tell the folks at home, Brian, where can people find you? Where can they get in touch with you and what's coming up in this week?
Right now, I'm not. I'm just miserable. This COVID is horrible, horrible. But when I'm actually awake and doing something, I'm throwing a lot onto Twitter. I'm still a Twitter person, even though I think it's going to be called X pretty soon. Who knows? Anyway, I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter. But you're also welcome to throw email. So if you've got a show suggestion or a topic suggestion, please feel free to email me. I'm Chebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. You're also welcome to throw email at twit@twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. Would love to hear from you, and I'm going to mute myself now.
Thank you, Chebert. Well, we also have to thank our very Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what about you? We know you're traveling. Black Hat's coming up. What's going on for you?
Black Hat is coming up, and in the meantime, I've got another piece that will be coming out on Omdia.com. I'll be pointing to that from probably LinkedIn as well, and in something that's a little bit unusual, the piece that I'm getting ready to write, which is oddly enough going to be on AI, will be available to everyone on the Omdia site, not just our subscribers. So I'll point to that, let people know when it's out. Talking about the importance of having policies in place for AI, because your employees are using them even if you don't have a policy in place. So it's better to get ahead of that if you can. And like I said, in the meantime, I'm getting ready for Black Hat and DEF CON. I've already had a couple of quiet listeners be in touch, saying they'd love to meet up with me, even if briefly, out in Las Vegas. Happy to do that. They can follow me and send me direct messages on, I suppose it's X now, KG4GWA. I'm on Mastodon, KG4GWA at Mastodon, KG4GWA.mastodon.sdf.org. Getting that particular address still trips me up. Also on LinkedIn at Curtis Franklin. So feel free to hit me up on any of those. Always happy to hear from our listeners.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/twiat. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes. Of course, we have the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information. Of course, those links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, right there, next to those videos, there you go. You get those helpful subscribe and download links, and you support the show. Get your audio version or video version of your choice. Go ahead and subscribe. anyone of your podcast applications out there, because we're on all of them. Subscribing to the show definitely helps us support the show. And of course, you want to support the show and the network, you should definitely join Club Twit. That's right. It's a members only ad free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. It's only $7 a month. That's right. There it is. And it's a lot of great things that come with it. Not only do you have the ad free, but you also have exclusive access to the Discord server, which has a ton of channels on there. Of course, you can chat with hosts and producers and, you know, lots of side discussions. Plus, they also have some amazing bonus content plus special events. That's right. Lots of great events on there. And I'm going to be on there in next month as well. And so definitely join Club Twit. Be part of that movement. Go to twit.tv/ClubTwit. Now, you should also know that they also offer corporate group plans. That's corporate group plans. That's right. It's a great way to give your entire team access to the ad-free podcast. And you can start at 5 members at a discount rate of just $6 each per month. You can add as many seats as you like. And of course, it's a really great way for your IT departments, your sales teams, your service departments, whoever, to get access to all of our podcasts. And just like that regular membership, you can join the Discord server and get that bonus feed as well. So definitely join and be part of that movement. And also, they have family plans as well. Just $12 a month, you get 2 seats with that, and it just $6 for each additional family member. And you can get all the advantages of that single plan as well. So lots of options. Definitely check out Club Twit at twit.tv/ClubTwit. Now, after you subscribe, definitely impress your family members, your coworkers, your friends with the gift of Twiat, because we talk a lot about some fun tech topics on this show, and I guarantee they find it fun and interesting as well. Keep it on top of the enterprise and IT news. So definitely join with that, share it with them as well. But after you subscribe, we also do this show live. That's right. We're doing it live right now. Live.twit.tv. Check out that website, because that's where all the streams are at. You come see all the behind the scenes, how the pizza's made, all the banter, and all before and after the show. So definitely check out the live stream. If you're going to watch the show live, we also have an infamous IRC channel as well, the Twit Live channel. You can get to it by just going to irc.twit.tv, and they'll pop you right in to the Twit Live channel. So we have lots of great characters in there. Of course, they keep us on our toes. And not only that, they keep us laughing throughout the week. So thank you guys for being there and being part of that movement. Now, if you want to contact me, definitely hit me up. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/LouMM. There you can post direct messages, whatever, show concepts, show ideas. You want to talk tech, you want to talk about cybersecurity, whatever you want to talk about. I'm big on service design and architecture. I love that. So definitely hit me up on there. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn as well, Louis Meska on LinkedIn. I do a lot of posting on there, a lot of channels, a lot of conversations, even some live stuff on there. So definitely check out LinkedIn. And of course, I'm on Mastodon as well, LouMM at twit.social. You can definitely hit me up as there as well. Now, if you want to know what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, you can check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There it is. It's the latest, greatest ways for you to customize your office experience to make it more productive for you. And of course, if you have Microsoft 365 and you pop open Excel, check out that Automate tab. That's right. It's the new tab in there, and it really helps you automate your processes and your analysis within Excel. And of course, it generates scripts for you, which you can automate on Power Automate. You can create different connectors, different services, and integrate data. It's really a lot of fun, and it really makes it more powerful for you. So definitely check that out. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. And of course, thank you to all the engineers and staff at Twit. They make it possible for us. And of course, thank you to Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show. And of course, we couldn't do the show without him. Thank you, Chibert, for all your support. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank our editor for today, because they are going to make us look good after the fact. So thank you for cutting out all my mistakes. And of course, thank you to our TD for today, Mr. Victor. Victor, it's always great seeing you. Any special events come up this week for Twit?
I was just going to mention the one about you, but it's not on our on our Discord Club Twit events, on our Discord. It shows some of our upcoming events, like Ant has a live photo critique on August 4th.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
I think I'm going to submit something there. And
nice.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Is he going to have to be nice? Hopefully he's not. Hopefully he's still not nice.
No, he still wouldn't be. He's not obligated to, but yeah. And then there's one that we're all looking forward to, a fireside chat with Daniel Suarez and Hugh Howey. two great authors. So that's going to be in September, I believe. Fantastic. So yeah, look out for that.
Looking forward
and
to this.
I have to go to this shot because it has that cold Dutch tilt like in the old Batman show. So
very cool. Very cool. Thanks, Victor. Appreciate it. Thanks for being here. Thank you for support. And I'm Louis Wreska, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the Enterprise, just keep quiet.
It's midweek, and you really want to know even more about the world of technology.
So you should check out Tech News Weekly, the show where we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news.
It's the biggest news. We talk with the people writing the stories that you're probably reading. We also talk between ourselves about the stories that are getting us even more excited about tech news this week.
So if you're excited, well, then join us. Head to twit.tv/TNW to subscribe.
All you want is to meet your security and compliance requirements, but your business technology keeps changing. Cyber threats emerge every day. More regulations apply to you now than ever before, and your IT resources remain limited. The Center for Internet Security can help. At CIS, we work to create a safer world for people, businesses, and governments through collaboration and innovation. Using a community-driven consensus process, we work with IT professionals and volunteers around the world to develop and maintain security best practices. These resources save you time, money, and effort wherever you are on your cybersecurity journey. We also work with U.S. state, local, tribal, and territorial government organizations to share information with one another so they're stronger together. Join us today in creating confidence in the connected world. Visit CISecurity.org to play your part.